let's call them what they were, Pakistani rape and torture gangs. This was the girl who was 13 years of age. Her anus was artificially pumped up, and she was simultaneously raped vaginally and anally by four Pakistani men. And she was subject to the most appalling physical abuse as well. This will never be forgiven. You still have this burning resentment amongst people like myself. You know, never forgive, never forget. And that does influence your attitude to immigration.
Hello, 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 and welcome to this edition of The Jolly Heretic. I have a very special guest for you today, and that is Mr. Dave Atherton, who is prominent online as a campaigning and fearless and red-pilled journalist. So, Dave, hello.
Hi, how are you doing?
So, could you tell, for the viewers that aren't perhaps familiar with you because they're from America or something, could you tell them a little bit about yourself?
Well, I'm 65 years of age. I spent most firm by 11 plus and went to a comprehensive. And after that, I spent 36 years working in recruitment. And the last sort of 7-8 years working as a journalist and broadcaster, in a nutshell. Probably sort of, you know, if you ask me what my politics were 20 years ago, 10, 20 years ago, I'd probably say classical liberal. And if you ask me today, I'd probably say to you, I'm sort of fairly right wing, should we say? Fairly right wing, yeah.
And so, how did that? And you've been involved in a lot of what people would call fairly right wing stuff, haven't you? And most recently, the Crowborough campaign.
Yeah, indeed, yeah, absolutely. Well, yeah, I go to quite a few protests up and down the country. I spent a lot of time over in Essex, actually, and I've been to Braintree, Chelmsford. I went to Crowborough as well. I went to the Barbican. I've also helped call in the background. I've also helped organise them. I've tipped off the alternative media that the event's going on, and also in some cases, I had to get mainstream media down there as well. So probably the most successful was probably the one at the Barbican.
For American viewers, he's talking about the hotels where they put up these fake asylum seekers that come over on small boats. So what was it that was most successful about the Barbican, do you think?
It closed it down. Mm-hmm. Three months after we turned out, GB News turned out, and there was loads of alternative media there. And I think the people who owned the hotel didn't like it. And 3 months later, they closed it down. The last person moved out in December the 15th.
So you were saying that 20 years ago or so, 2006, 2005, you would have called yourself a classical liberal, but now you would call yourself rather more right-wing. So why has this changed, do you think?
Well, in a word, immigration. We have you can choose any time you like. You might want to kick off maybe in 1968 with Enoch Powell's famous Rivers of Blood speech. We have been ignored now for what, 50, 60, 70 years. In fact, I'd probably go back and say we've been ignored since 1950. There's a guy called Dr. Marcus Waring, I think his surname is. He's a social historian at Loughborough University. He's collated all the polls. He's a social historian and he's collated all the polls since 1950 that have been done on immigration. And, it's consistent, since 1950, that's what, 76 years now, near enough? But certainly over 75 years. People have generally voted 66, 70%, 75% in not wanting any further immigration. It's stopped, reduced, or to a trickle or whatever, as we have been defied now for 76 years. And, by the way, talking of Enoch Powell's Rivers of Blood speech, there were three opinion polls at the time. Do you agree with Enoch or not? And the worst one was 67%. The second one was 75% in favour of Enoch Powell. And there was another one where they were 83% in favour of Enoch Powell's speech. And, you know, like today, you know... he was at the time he was denounced, like anybody today who, like Tommy Robinson, you know, is denounced as a racist and a fascist and a far right and what have we. You know, I was a classical liberal 20 years ago. I probably describe myself as a fairly sort of mainstream right of centre person these days.
Did you vote New Labour in 1997?
No, I just abstained.
All right, okay.
I've always, generally speaking, up until 1997, I was eligible to vote. Yeah, first of all, to vote in 1979 election, where we saw Margaret Thatcher be elected, and we've been waiting for a second coming since 1990, haven't we? So 1997, I just abstained, and I went back to voting Tory in the next general election.
But so it was immigration specifically, though. When you say classical liberal, what do you mean exactly?
Economically, I'm probably still a classical liberal. Minimal government, lower taxation, and the complete absence, if you like, of state control of your life and what you do on a day to day basis. I was once for the full legalisation of all drugs. Class A, particularly cocaine and heroin, but I've slightly backed away from that and want to see how things go. But on the one hand, prohibition. I think it was in 1970 that Richard Nixon, said he wouldn't want to have a drug-free world. The Americans spent $1 trillion on the prohibition of Class A and Class B drugs. And, you know, what, 50 odd years later, it's just as the consumption is up. People haven't stopped taking Class A drugs. So, you know, what do you do? To my mind, it's either two things. You either go the complete legalization route, like they did in Portugal, which does seem to have some successes, or you take a particularly draconian approach, like is it Bukele, the guy who is president of El Salvador? You know, you round everybody up and stick him in jail, you know, and lose some of the due process.
Even with softer drugs. As a child, my grandparents lived in Winchester, and they had this neighbour, Henry next door, and he smoked like a chimney. And then I hadn't been there for a while. I hadn't been there for 6 months or something. And then suddenly I hadn't seen Henry for a year, I don't know. And then I saw him and he was enormously fat. And I said to my grandma, why is Henry so fat? And he's always given up smoking. And I remember a light bulb turned on in my head at the time. Like, okay, so they're telling us we shouldn't smoke. It's at school, it's so bad to smoke, but isn't that going to mean everyone becomes really fat? So shouldn't you leave smoking alone?
Yeah.
I hear that you've been promoting the rights of smokers.
Well, indeed, yeah. Unfortunately, in being fat, probably isn't going to do him that much harm compared to smoking. Despite the fact I'm pro-choice on smoking, that's how I actually got into politics. That's how I got into journalism was via the smoking ban. I started off a group called co-started a group called Freedom to Choose, and they started a blog. They got slightly invited on the TV and radio, and that's how I got into journalism. I ended up being one of the founder journalists for Breitbart in Europe. So that's basically how I got into it. If you give up smoking, I'm fat based. If you give up smoking at the age of 30, you return to normal mortality. As opposed to if you compare a group of smokers to non-smokers, on average, the non-smokers will live 10 years longer. If you give up by the age of 30, you'll return to normal mortality. You'll get 9 out of 10 years back if you give up by the age of 40. Then it goes down to at 60, you get three extra years back. So, yeah, I'm getting my 3 extra years back.
Oh, okay, you've given up.
Even if you are fat, you'll still live longer if you give up smoking.
Okay. Well, that's true, isn't it? Because this guy, Henry, he lived until his 80s. I remember when I was a kid, all these old guys were dying at like in their late 60s. Yeah. And it was always to do with smoking. But moving on from that, though, was there a moment? Because for me, there was a moment where a light bulb went on in my head and I thought, hang on, we're entering tyranny here. This is a problem. And that was within days of Labour being elected in 1997. And there was I was about 16, and there was an interview on TV with Jack Straw, and he said, we're going to pass a law where it's a more severe criminal offence if it's motivated by racial hatred than if it isn't, in order to express society's repugnance at racism. And I was like, hang on a minute, that isn't that just going to mean black people are a privileged class, that if you beat up a black person, then they can just say, oh, it was racist, and you get done more. Hang on, this is a problem, isn't it? But with you, obviously, it seems to have happened later. So was there something, was there an event which was a light bulb moment where you thought, hang on, immigration is a serious problem here?
Yeah, it was when, I think the guy's name is Nether. He was a speechwriter for Tony Blair. And I think he wrote this in about the noughties, late noughties, maybe 2010 at the very latest. And he said that Tony Blair invited all those people in from the third world. They scoured the world for migrants to give work permits to. And he said he did it to rub the noses of the rights. Sorry, they wanted to rub the rights noses in it, you know, for the sake of diversity. And that was it. So this is now social engineering. This was the origins of the great replacement that we're going through at the moment. When it was engineered, there was no rhyme or reason to it, and you know, and it was for political purposes rather than economic and social purposes. That was it. I'm looking at my Overton window and seeing what I can get away with.
But why didn't it occur to you before then? Because it seems to me obvious. Like you said, you failed 11 plus, whatever. You went to a comprehensive. There would have been working class kids there. Maybe they did bricklaying at your school, woodwork, whatever. And it seems to me absolutely obvious that if you have immigration, you undermine the wages of English working class people. How can you not do that?
Indeed. Well, to be honest, in my 36 years of working in recruitment, I was actually quite well paid. So, funny enough, I was having this conversation yesterday with somebody. If you start off with 100 salespeople, I used to work in computer recruitment, start off with 100 salespeople in recruitment in 5 years' time, 95% in other words, would have left the industry and got themselves a job somewhere else. It's a really, really tough job. But if you do make it, it can be extremely well paid. You generally had sort of eight years of making hay. You had sort of a year or two of a very bad recession, lose your job, then you start all over again. It was extremely well paid. I think probably the difference is back in 2010, I didn't see the mass immigration on the streets. I think even going back to 2010, I think it's like 60% of people who lived in London were white. Now it's 38%. Now it was not visible. That was probably also when the internet was a lot less sophisticated, and camera equipment, was a lot more unsophisticated. So with X and social media, you can report, Abdul from Afghanistan has raped a 12-year-old. You didn't have access to that information. Now you do. That's the reason that they passed the Online Safety Act. It was just a tool to bully social media to shut them up on things like immigration.
So you think that the internet has been, because of course the 2010 election, part of the 2010 election was the fear that Nick Griffin would be elected in Barking. And even prior to that, you had, I think they had over 50 councillors, the BNP, that they accrued between 2002 and 2010. So there were clearly significant parts of the country that had enough in a way that even in the 70s with the National Front, they hadn't, because they were never elected councillors.
Yeah, indeed. That's a good point, actually. Because I think in 2009, during the Euro elections, Bronze and Griffin were elected to the European Parliament, weren't they? Bronze up in Yorkshire and Griffin in, I think, was it London he was elected? There was the rise of the real what I call the real far right in those days. And I think maybe the internet has intensified things over the last 16 years or so. I don't know whether you've noticed yet, but the Overton window has massively shifted to the right. Have you noticed that?
Yes, I have.
Yeah, you do.
Well, no, you feel backed up. So whereas even in 2019, when I first started this channel and whatever, I was concerned about being cancelled or whatever and awful things happening. It was taking a risk. This is not so now. There's now a whole ecosystem, a whole counterculture that is on your side.
Yeah, indeed. I think absolutely there are indeed. In fact, just sort of back up what you're saying about YouTube and what have you, Ed, is that do you remember that? I don't know whether you remember recently that hit piece Channel 4 News did on AY Aldis, Anthony. AY Aldis, he's one of the citizen journalists, and the Channel 4 News person turned up at the, I think it was Epping, and they sort of interviewed him, and you know, and they wanted to paint him as a far right person. And Channel 4 News last year did this sort of hit piece on him, AY Aldis, AY underscore Aldis underscore CFL, I think is his Twitter account. And Kathy Newman on Channel 4 News said in a piece to the camera, said, "We did approach YouTube for comment, but they tell us that he wasn't contravening his the terms and conditions of the service." If you'd gone back 10 years or so, Anthony AY Aldis would have been cancelled for that. I think also Google, after Donald Trump came back into power a year or so ago, they actually turned. Google obviously owned YouTube, indeed, and they actually said that, you know, we were really badly constrained what we could do on free speech with Biden and the Democrats in power. Now there does seem to be a sea change, and you know, you would have thought that, you know, if they upset Donald Trump to the nth degree, he would break up YouTube, he'd break up Google, and they lose all their privilege and all their rights and all the money they make. So you know, things are looking a lot more healthier than they were. I haven't had a request from X, famous last words, to delete one of my posts at all in the last year or so. I've got the odd community note. But no, we say, "Oh, this is offensive. Delete it." I've got round to knowing what I can and what I can't get away with. You can euphemise things to a certain extent. You know, you don't say low IQ. You say someone who, you know, comes from a country with particularly low levels of education. Yeah, no, just particularly low levels of education, which is probably demonstrable as well. You know, something like Somali, I think. Anyway, so I better not go into that. You might get a strike for what I was about to say there, but I know it is. This is the reason why they want to crack down on us so hard, is because the Overton window is. Could you imagine talking about mass deportations, mass re-emigration a year ago, 2 years ago, 5 years ago, 10 years ago? You'd be howled
even
down.
So that they changed policy. So in the '70s, the National Front, in the '80s, when it was led by Andrew Bronze, for example, were talking about that mass repatriation and so on. And then the BNP in 1999 changed their policy to voluntary repatriation, because the idea of mass deportation was so unacceptable to most British people. But the thing is, it's the scale of it and the complete. I mean, I was in Birmingham a while ago. Just whole areas where every single person is foreign, and a lot of them, maybe half of them, foreign born. Not even and it's a clear invasion.
It's a great replacement. You know, I'm lucky. I live in a really expensive suburb of southwest London these days. But my penance was I did 30 years in Hackney and Leytonstone. They really are in the city shithouses. You know, when I used to live in, I say Hackney was actually Clapham, which is literally adjacent to Hackney town centre. I used to live off Murder Mile, which is the lower Clapham Road, and the upper Clapham Road goes from funny enough, the Hackney police station right up to Stamford Hill. There's Waitrose supermarket at the top of the road. And let's be honest, the vast majority of people were quite decent. I quite like them. I had got nothing against them. But there was always this sizable minority who I thought were absolute scum. You really did resent them being there and, you know, hanging around the streets, you know, making complete idiots, you know, making complete menaces of other people that were going on there. My reflection was, I never felt unsafe In Acne and Lancaster, if I was wearing a pair of jeans and a t-shirt. And the minute I put a suit on, I painted a target on myself. Again, not all the time. You know, 364 days of the year, I'll get off the bus, 55 bus, opposite the church and walk home at 1 o'clock, 3 o'clock in the morning or whatever the time would be. I'm perfectly safe. But there's always sort of one incident per year where things could have got out of hand.
Yeah, I mean, my parents, I'm from Wimbledon, talking to Southwest London, and this was 10% non-white in 1980 when I was born. And now it's more than half.
Even Wimbledon?
The borough of Wimbledon. What about the centre of Wimbledon?
Merton and places like
the
that.
The borough of Merton. And this includes places like Mitcham and Morden. It's so quick. In 2010, Barking was about 40% non-white. Now it's about 40% white. And so that's just 15 years.
I'm surprised as much as that, to be honest.
And so it's an incredible speed. But what's interesting, though, in terms of what you were saying earlier about the people becoming aware of it, I think it's maybe these asylum hotels, because they've scattered them all over the country, including in areas like Crowborough that are overwhelmingly white, that haven't experienced anything before like this.
Sure, indeed. Well, welcome to my world, as they say. For example, Crowborough, what's her name? Millward, Rachel Millward, is it? One of the deputy leaders of the Green Party, you know, refugees welcome. And she's on the council, I think, you know, for Crowborough at the moment. I can't see her keeping her seat, I'll tell you. And, she's obviously the liberal and the idiot and the useful idiot on immigration, but she doesn't want the camp in her town, you know? Very, very old, very, very old. Time of Michael Foote, the 1980s, when a group of gypsies encamped on Hampstead Heath, where he lived. I remember the furore, but I think it was about 87. And he demanded the gypsies be removed and things like that, we can't have these people here, you know. But what about all the other places up and down the country, where travellers go around the country, making a mess and a nuisance of themselves, then you got howled down as being racist against the Roma sort of thing. But once something like this affects one of the liberals in this country, they all of a sudden change tune. It's just the most bottom clenching hypocrisy I've ever come across.
Do you think that's true of conservatives as well, or do you think liberals are higher in hypocrisy somehow?
Oh, the liberals are higher. Liberals are higher in hypocrisy. They're sort of the hamsters, types of the liberal types, and anybody who's brought by and large upper middle class or upper class. Well, not upper class, but upper middle class. You judge type level of people. Funny enough, I'm going through a libel trial at the moment, and I met a judge. He's absolutely clueless. He has no idea what life is outside his cloister chambers are. He had all these nice leather-bound law books, and he was sucking up to a solicitor who was after me for money at the moment. He didn't understand. He just did not have a clue. And he was of the opinion that Muslims, as a general body, think like us. It's complete opposite. These people do not share our values. They are not champions of the Enlightenment and Western liberal democracy. They are part of the Ummah, the Worldwide Brotherhood of Islam. For the most important thing in their life, like Shabana Mahmood said in that interview November last year for British Muslim TV, Islam was the most important thing in her life, and influenced her life in general. That's what the average British Muslim thinks like. There were more British people, British-born people, British people with British passports. I don't consider these people to be British. Went to fight for ISIS in Syria and the Middle East than were currently in the British Army. You know, they are not all of them, but there are far too many of them who are a fifth column. You only have to see what happened in Birmingham, where they banned the Maccabi Tel Aviv fans from coming. And
are you ready for the future of the West? Thank you for listening. If you'd like to hear the full thing, as well as help with my other projects, then please become a subscriber at jollyheretic.com.